Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our wonderful organization, Toward the Light, and this radio program, please do visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have a special colleague and friend who does similar work as I do, and she does a training entitled Transitional Guides and the Art of Conscious Dying. Let us welcome to Toward the Light, Diane Goble. Hello, Diane, and welcome to Toward the Light.
Hello, Juliet. Thank you so much for having me.
It's really wonderful to have you on the show finally, and what I would like to do first of all is to invite you to share with our listeners first about your near-death experience.
Okay. I don't want to take up all our time with it. I could talk for a couple hours, I suppose. You know,
whatever you'd like to share about it, because I know that always triggers us or catapults us onto these very special paths and missions, as it were. So, sort of like to share a little bit about one's NDE. Just summarize it if you'd like. Whatever you'd like to share is absolutely fine.
Okay, I think I'll talk about it in terms of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. Because there are a lot of details that make it a really interesting story, but people can read that on my website. I have a couple of websites that we'll mention later, but so the details are on there. But just the part about leaving your body, I drowned. I was Whitewater River rafting, and we did something stupid and got caught and got flipped out of the raft, and somebody was trying to hold on to my arm, somebody who's still in the raft, and I kept getting sucked under, and then it would kick me back up. It's a phenomenon called the hydraulic, and the water kind of churns around like in a washing machine instead of going straight down like a normal waterfall. And it sucks kayaks and rafts and logs and whatnot into it and doesn't release them. So our raft got stuck in there, and I was between the rock and the hard place because I had the rocks at my back and smashing my face into the raft and being sucked under and then pulled back up to get a breath. And it was like, oh, this is not good. And my mind is, even though I knew I was aware of what was happening to my body, my mind was like analyzing the situation. I'm a Virgo. I do that. I can't help it. You know, so there I am in this terrible position about to die, and I'm going, well, how do I want to die here? I don't want to keep getting smashed into the rocks, so this guy has to let go of me, and, you know, how am I going to get him to let go of me? So, this whole dialogue is going on in my head. And I finally managed, in my mind, I decided that I was going to die, and one way or another, however it was going to be, I was going to die. And it was all very calm. There was no panic or fear or anything. I just knew I had to make a decision about how to die. And so on the next time that I got pushed up out of the water, I just screamed at whoever was holding my arm to let go. And with that, I took my last breath, because then I went back down under the raft. And I immediately knew I was going to die, and I drank in the water, and everything went black. And that was what I had assumed would happen when we die. That's it. Everything goes black. Turn out the light. We're all gone. And then all of a sudden, I found myself awake and alert, and I was up above the river. So, I mean, this had never occurred to me. This happened in 1971. I was 30 years old, and, you know, I'd had some interest in religion earlier on, and but I didn't pursue it, and I was more or less an atheist at the time this happened to me, and I'd never heard of anything like this before. Raymond Moody hadn't written his book, and, you know, nobody talked about this back then. So the people I tried to tell were very dismissive of me and just, you know, they're there, you're in shock, everything will be okay. And, you know, so it was a very strange thing to me that there I was above the river looking down on the raft in the water, and one guy still in the raft, the other guy had jumped out, and the woman had floated downstream, and I saw my husband and my teenage sister and a bunch of other people come running up the hill to find out what happened, because they had gone down before us and they were fine. And so we decided they went so easily, we would just follow, and we had the cameras and the coolers and the extra oars and whatnot in our raft, and, you know, so we just jumped in the river and didn't know what we were doing, of course, and then made this error and got turned around backwards and just, you know, this disaster happened. But in my consciousness, I was seeing this, the result of this, the people trying to find me, nobody could find me. And my husband later said, and I just recently asked him for his version, he said when he got up there, I was still being held onto, and then the guy in the raft let go, and I went under the water, and he didn't see me come up. And he said he didn't know how long later, but he looked downstream, and there I was. So somehow, in a few minutes period of time, my body had turned around underneath the raft for some amount of time and then was spit out and sent downstream, but nobody saw me until I popped up downstream. And that was the end of my experience. I went through an afterlife experience on the other side, and at the end of it, I popped out through this, like, sparkling glass, and that was part of what was happening to me. Like shards of glass, colored glass sparkling and twinkling in the air, and all of a sudden my head popped out and I was downriver. So I don't know what happened to me between the time I went under the raft and got downriver. I was totally unconscious of what was happening to my body. And I was a swimmer. I was a high school champion. I was a water skier. I was a scuba diver. I was a body surfer. I was always in the water. So it was not like I was somebody who'd never been in the water and I didn't know what to do. I'd struggled many times underwater, under a wave or whatever, and I was totally conscious of what was happening with my body. But in this case, I was not. I had no idea what happened to my body and how it got from here to there. So what I learned from all of this is the process that we go through when we die, because I believe that I died. You could say that my body went into shock, that everything shut down, because when I got downriver and grabbed onto the rock, I just coughed and sputtered and spit and I was fine. I didn't need to be resuscitated. I didn't need care. I just got up and grabbed onto the rock. So it's fairly unexplainable about how I got from here to there, but I was awake in another world. And I had this vast experience that I'm not going to go into now, but, you know, that has just amazed me my entire life that this happened to me, because I had nobody to talk about it.
I think even if your body did go into shock, which would be very normal to do, you still were conscious in spite of what was happening with your body, because, of course, consciousness, as people are starting to learn now, is not a part of the body or the brain. It's what animates the body and the brain.
Exactly,
And yours is such a beautiful example of, indeed, consciousness is, you know, the consciousness is never interrupted. It shifts. But it is never interrupted when one's body ceases to operate, as it were.
And right, it's just like opening a door and going into another room.
Exactly, and that's what I write about in my NDE account as well. And it's so beautiful also how simultaneously so many of us NDEs come to the same conclusions, even using the same analogies. Also the fact, which was really mostly the case with me as well, when I left my body during my near-death states, I wasn't hovering around my body. I went far and away from it. I really mm-hmm. wasn't interested in the body.
Right.
So that's something else we seem to...
Yeah, I went through that. I had the tunnel experience, and you know, I went into the light, and I was in this mm-hmm. other dimension, and I saw beings, and I saw buildings and landscapes, and, I mean, it just goes on and on that there's no... It's so... And that's one of the things that I've come to realize with people is that when they die, it's so familiar, the state that they're in is so familiar that they don't realize they died.
Exactly.
And this is what creates problems with people crossing over because they don't believe it. And it's only when nobody responds to them, you know, they try to, you know, grab us and hug us. And I put my hand through my husband's, it went right through his body.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to get his attention to tell him, don't jump in the river to try to save me because I'm not there. You know, and so that's what I believe is that we have the opportunity to say goodbye to our loved ones if we know we can do it. And if our loved ones know to expect it, they will feel it.
Yes, and that's a very important point you've just made there. And in fact, lately there's been a lot of dialogue about that very thing. You know, it's a two-way street. The people who are transitioning or have transitioned and the people who are on the receiving end on this plane, receiving the telepathy and what have you, it's so important for both parties to pay attention because there's so many subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways
mm-hmm.
that someone on the other side is going to reach out and connect.
Right. Sometimes somebody will say, gee, I just had a shiver. I wonder what that was. But they don't connect
yes.
what it was. And, it, you know, could be their loved one is standing right there and just gave them a little pinch. And they're not you. But if they knew that that could happen, they're like, oh, Mom, you're here. That's what I do when I get something from my mother. It's like, oh, hi, Mom.
Yes, exactly. And these are wonderful points to share and even some of the nuances of what, you know, people might experience. But and what a powerful NDE you had indeed, and intuitively I'm getting, indeed you died too. And it can be just a few seconds, and then all of a sudden your body just revives and is fine, and there is a lot of spontaneous recovery, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard many people who had serious accidents, even like a car wreck or something, and had a near-death experience, and they survived with barely any injuries or something that healed very quickly.
Mm, indeed. In fact, one of those types of individuals was at our Light on the Water Near-Death Support and Interest Group meeting, the local one yesterday. She was in a head-on motor car accident. She did have an NDE, but she, let's put it this way, she could have been a lot worse off than she ended up being.
No.
So there was obviously a lot of protection around her. Bless her, and how wonderful. There's been amazing testimonies about
mm-hmm.
this type of thing.
Yeah.
So what got you into the work that you're doing now? Because I do find it really significant and very important, the art of conscious dying. Is that basically what you call your work? And I know that you've written the book Transition Guides.
Right. Well, the art of conscious dying isn't my phrase. There's a Latin word, a Latin phrase, ars moriendi, which means something like that. So it's been known down through the ages. It's not new information. I spent a lot of years, because it's been 6, 7 years since my experience, and the first 7 years I went back to being unconscious because I couldn't deal with what had happened to me. So because back then nobody talked about it. I just, you know, they basically thought I was either nuts or, you know, then I'd get by religious people and they'd say, oh, it's the work of the devil. And, you know, it's like, well, no, I know it was so much love involved in that experience that there could be no devil involved in it. So
Exactly.
You know, and you don't know where to go and who to ask. And it just happened that, what I could say is now that I can look back on so many years, and, you know, 6+ decades of my life, and I can see patterns, but back then I couldn't have told you why I went back to college and studied psychology, or why I got interested in physics and astronomy and things that had never interested me before, and philosophy and theology, and, you know, I just for years studied, read everything I could get my hands on, trying to figure out what had happened to me and, you know, what this could possibly mean. And, you know, finally one day I'm in a light center and I pick up a book and I start reading it and it's, oh my God, this woman is describing what happened to me. And it was Ruth Montgomery, and she wrote a book called, sorry, I can't think of the name of it right now.
I'm blanking out too, I apologize.
So many books. Yeah, and so long ago. But she talked about walk-ins. And although I thought that was interesting, I didn't feel like a walk-in because I felt like I was still myself. You know, and that, I guess that's a possibility. Some people say they are walk-ins, but that's not what I was. But the experience that she described about going to the other side matched what happened to me. And so then, of course, that began me on a quest to study more and more and more. And then finally I found that, you know, from the Egyptians on, or I don't know, maybe even before them, with their death rituals and the Tibetan Book of the Dead and everything, the light bulb went on, and it's like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And this evolved over years. As I said, I went back to school, and I got a master's degree in psychology, and I got a master's degree in hypnotherapy, and I became an ordained minister, and I became a spiritual teacher. And what started out as teaching stress management then got into personal development, and then body, mind, spirit integration, and spiritual development. And so I evolved over the years in my teaching, and what I came to was what we need is a guidebook that will help us know beforehand what to expect when we die, because we all get to die, so we ought to know something about it.
At least, you know, our bodies do.
Yeah, our bodies, right. And so, you know, who better than to tell is near-death experiencers who have done it. So that's kind of where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I did write a book back in 1992 called Through the Tunnel, A Traveler's Guide to Spiritual Rebirth, which is more esoteric. It's based on the Egyptian and Tibetan books of the dead, but it's the same idea. So what I've evolved that to now is this new training I call the people who do it transition guides. But that's my name for it. A lot of other people I'm finding are doing very similar teaching, and they're going by different names. There's death practitioner, there's doula, there's spiritual midwife, you know, different terms like that. But so the field is evolving, and eventually it'll probably all come together into one thing. But
on last week's show, I had Marilyn Strong.
Strong, right.
Death midwifery, and I just thought that this is so beautiful, so...
Right, and it's become like she's doing, she works with home funerals and green burials, so that's like a continuum, where with mine, you start working with somebody before they have a disease, before they get hit by a bus. You teach them the basics, which is really meditation. It's about learning to relax the body and the mind, and to use guided imagery to deal with issues in your life that are blocking you, which will block you when you're dying. And the Tibetans call it the bardo, the life review, which is done in the afterlife. But we can do that before we die, so that when we die, we can go right to the light.
Yes.
That's why a lot of near-death experiencers go through the life review process. And what they find out is it's not a judgment. It's not a reward-punishment situation. Karma is not reward-punishment. It's learning to be compassionate, to be unconditionally loving. And we go through all of these horrendous experiences in our lives to try to figure that out. And it's like, when are you going to get the message that it's all about love? So we can learn to do this through these techniques before we die, and then we write our own, what I call a guidebook to conscious dying, into the clear light. And I'll explain clear light in a minute. But it's like you imagine what it's going to be like to die. So if you're a Christian, you have, you know, your certain way of, I'm going to meet Jesus, and, or, you know, I'm going to go to the pearly gates, or whatever you think is going to happen is okay to imagine, because what will happen is what is meant to happen when you get there. But when you practice it, it calms you, it helps you become peaceful and accepting of your death. So you learn to accept that you're going to die and that it's a wonderful thing. I've called it graduation from the University of Life on Earth, and I think I've read that you, in some of your writings, you call it something similar. It's a celebration.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we're going to be reborn on the other side. We're going to see our family who have gone before us again, and we're going to go on with our lives. And so it's something to celebrate.
May I share just a little paragraph I wrote in this article, and I sent it out because this is so exactly what is aligned with what we're talking about. It says, alas, I don't want people to be confused by thinking that there's just one place of existence on the other side or afterlife. There isn't. There are multiple dimensions, and souls do traverse to various planes after transitioning, depending on one's level of soul maturity and awareness, as well as one's frame of mind at the time of one's transitioning. In a huge way, it's no different than moving house, and what decisions you make based on your current frame of mind, needs, desires, goals, aspirations, etc., and what you believe is possible. It is so much about our consciousness and being centered in love that determines the outcome or destination, as it were. So this is the type of thing that I've
Yeah, that's
seen.
Beautiful,
right.
Beautifully written. Yeah, and that explains it exactly. Yeah, because if you
and
have
course,
that...
Go ahead. I've shared stuff likewise as you have with my article entitled The Dying Process from an Experiencer's Perspective.
Where is that article? I wanted to read that.
It is on towardthelight.org, and it is under near-death studies, so you can see near-death studies, and then there's a drop-down in the nav bar, and you'll see the dying process. And if you click on that, that will take you to that article.
Okay, and, yeah, I wanted to read that because, you know, what's amazing to me is that when I read your stuff, it's like, oh, my God, we think so much alike.
Yes.
How can that possibly be? We even use the same words sometimes. It's like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, so, you know, who else is like that is PMH Atwater.
Absolutely. We've commented on that, too, back and forth to each other. In fact, she took this article and she's published it on her website.
Did she? I wrote to her after I read her book about what it is to die, or I can't remember, again, I'm bad at remembering titles.
Oh, the article, what death is and what it feels like to die.
No, she wrote a book.
The book. Oh, where did it? Okay, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry again, I don't remember the name of it. But as I was, I read it after I wrote the course that I wrote for this transition guide training. I read her book, and I went, oh, my God, if I had read her book before I had done this, I wouldn't have done this, because she's saying exactly what I'm saying in the thing. And to me, that's how I am so sure that we're right. You know, people say, oh, how can you believe that? It's just nonsense. It's magical thinking. Well, if so many people can be coming up with the same thought pattern, it's obvious how consciousness spreads. And that this has got to be in the right direction. You know, we're not trying to hurt anybody. We're trying to give people peace, because fear of death is what I get more email about people who have fear of death.
I do,
and,
too.
And you, too, have said in yours that you're, and I believe my mission for coming back has been to help people overcome fear of death. That's my specific
mission. Well, I was assigned
mission.
Specifically to share with people that life is eternal.
Right.
That consciousness cannot cease. I mean, that's just utterly impossible. And when you were saying just a moment ago about people saying, oh, how can you believe that? It's not about belief. It's about knowing.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of our experiences. And another thing that I wanted to say is that I think it's fine that you didn't spot PMH's book before you wrote it because my feeling of this is very strongly that we can't say too much about this.
Oh,
there can't
be yeah.
too many people writing and,
exactly.
and speaking and sharing about this because we've still got a lot of work to do.
That's the thing about being spiritual is that there's not this jealousy and this I'm going to sue you thing. And we want everybody to talk about this. I don't want to be the one. I want everybody to be doing this. That's why I'm training other people who can go out and do this so that it spreads among the population and people are able to find a therapist who can work with them. You know, when you get a diagnosis, like hospice, you know, you're just going through this now. A doctor has to give you a diagnosis of 6 months to live, and then you can get hospice care. Well, what a perfect time to start learning how to die. Because hospice, they do everything for you. I'm a hospice volunteer. It relieves the family of the burden of the care, and they take care, you know, the medication, whatever you need. There's no invasive treatment. You don't even see a doctor if you don't want to. And, you know, and who does. So, you know, it's like a perfect time for a person to learn how to die. And by conscious dying, I mean not that you're awake. You could be in a coma before, you know, leading up to your dying time. But if you know this, you're already working on it in your consciousness, and your consciousness continues, so that doesn't stop. And so your body dies, and you just keep going on with what you've learned to do.
And then you discover, oh, I'm just feeling so light all of a sudden.
Exactly. Why can't anybody hear me? Why can't anybody see me? I feel fine.
Exactly. And, you know, that is really a tremendous thing. Something very powerful that indeed did happen is, I'm really marveling being in the moment flowing as all of these events unfold around me now. And, yes, as of a couple of days ago, I am officially enrolled in the hospice program now. And what was so beautiful, of course, I'm one, admittedly, who has avoided allopathic physicians, not the beautiful ones who've been on my radio show, mind you, who are very well, but just the system in general I've avoided. But, of course, in order to be in the hospice, you have to have a physician. So the hospice came and visited me, and then we were all doing outreach to find a physician, and admittedly I was nervous. I thought, oh goodness me, what's going to happen with this now?
No, certainly you would attract a good person.
Well, what ended up happening was that the hospice found a physician, a lovely female physician, Kimberly Schlesinger, and she was an absolute gem. Such a
wonderful,
loving, aware, kind
hospice
individual.
People are wonderful.
Oh, and this lady is so special, and I'm really pleased to acknowledge her on the air in association with the Heartland Hospice here in Hampton, Virginia. She was also very, very interested in my work. And she was confiding in me how patients would come to her and talk about their deathbed visions. And I said, Leslie, this is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And she said that somehow they felt like they could talk to her. And I said, oh, this is so wonderful. And so there was such a beautiful open dialogue going on with her, with the two social workers who were present, and my daughter and myself, and it couldn't have been more magical. I was blown away.
That's wonderful.
And so I'm feeling very excited in how all along I'm giving back as they're giving to me. It's a beautiful heartfelt exchange going on here. And I said, well, I've been through this before, so it's not strange to me. And we all got to share lots of humor and joy, as well as the serious dialogue and mm-hmm. making arrangements and that kind of thing. But I thought, yes, I want to share this with people because I want to help remove the mystique, the stigma, the, mm-hmm. oh, my God, what's happening? No, let's pull it out of the closet, and because it's just, again, it's just moving house, except I don't have to pack a bunch of stuff this time.
Exactly. You don't have to take anything with you.
No. Just yeah. all of you, all of the people
right.
I love.
All the love that you've shared. And yeah, the only people who you might have trouble with are the chaplains. You know, unless you find a chaplain who's into this, because the only ones that I've met have been pretty much fundamental.
So oh, yeah.
You know, they'll
want to
send
that one, then.
Yeah, they'll want to send a chaplain over to visit with you. So I have gotten into more than one argument with a hospice chaplain.
That is very interesting. Well, I just said, well, maybe, even though I'm a minister as well, but we can just compare notes. And
I hope you'll change some minds. I hope that you will actually offer yourself as a guest speaker at maybe some of the, you know, the hospice team. They have monthly meetings or whatever, and sometimes
Absolutely.
They'll have somebody come and speak, and, you know, somebody like you sharing your information with them will just change that whole hospice environment into something really beautiful.
Well, thank you, Lovie, because I had that idea too, and I thought, yes, I'm just going to keep working best I can do. Of course, I can't do as much or as rapidly as I was.
Right, but you are where you're supposed to be. You know, it's
exactly.
like now these people. It's like I need to get into hospice. I talk to my hospice and they blow me off. Oh, we're too busy. Oh, we've got this, we've got that. Got more excuses than I've ever heard. So it's not easy to get what I'm trying to, the kind of training. Yeah, I would like to train their trainer, who would then train the volunteer trainer, who would then train all the volunteers in this technique, teaching people how to, you know, reach that point of peace so that they just let go gently and they know what they can do once they get to the other side. That, you know, and again, it's the hospice chaplain. And yet I have met hospice chaplains since I've been expanding my work. Who are doing what, who are so open to what we're doing that I'm just amazed. Most of them are in the Buddhist range. You know, they stick with the Tibetan Book of the Dead style of doing this. So it's a little bit different. But at the same time, the Buddhists, the Zen Buddhists in San Francisco who started a hospice there have, you know, done some amazing work. It's just that it's a different, you know, it's a for a specific religion, and they're teaching it to people who are not of that religion. So I'm trying to be more eclectic so that anybody can adapt this to whatever their belief system is.
Well, in fact, that's really been paramount on my mind, too, because as I was thinking about, well, one little bit of disappointment I've had is that the hospice is confined to the, as far as its system being mobilized and working, they're confined to the allopathic medicine or system, as it were, whereas it would be nice if there were, you know, if there could be hospices centered on holistic approaches to health and transitioning, and we are part of people bringing on the new thinking and the new paradigm around transitioning, because also you're pointing out as well, which really concerns me, especially in this Western society, everything is so focused on the allopathic and Christian mindset.
Right.
And there are many, many, many of us who are not Christian and who also do not resonate with that philosophy, and also who do not really resonate with the allopathic, although this is definitely more, it's more gentle and certainly not as aggressive or imposing as, you know, those who are just trying to make somebody well or what have you. So that's kind of a relief, because I noticed when they were when I was talking to these people, they were just as interested in hearing about my wishes as I was in hearing about their ideas.
That's good.
And
yeah, and the thing is, it is changing. There is another movement that's coinciding with this other movement. It's the palliative care movement. And in Oregon, they are the most advanced. They're the first ones who passed the death with dignity law, that physician-assisted suicide is acceptable. So they are now, the hospice that I volunteer at in Oregon, my daughter lives up there and I go up there quite a bit, is incorporating two other, there's so many hospices up there that they're like competing with each other. So this one merged, this big one merged with another big one, and there, I think eventually will, there's like three or four cities there, and each one has a hospice, and some of them have two, and, you know, it makes no sense to overlap all that. So I think it's becoming one, and I think that they're training. There's a guy who wants to standardize hospice volunteer training so that it's, volunteers can move all over the country, and they'll get the same training, and the social workers and nurses will know what the volunteers are capable of doing, because right now they don't. They have no idea what volunteers do. And how much help they are. Only the volunteer trainer knows that. So, but they're having a transitions program. Unfortunately, they're using my same name. But you can, before you get that six-month diagnosis, 6 months to live, you can go into the palliative care. It's a home health. It's a branch of home health. You can stay in your home, and they will come to your home. Or now they have a facility where you can go pre-ending your care. You could still have some allopathic care, but it's basically palliative, where there's no care. And you could, whatever you sign is what it is you get, I guess. And then from there, you move into hospice when you get the six-month diagnosis. So there's several stages, home health to the palliative care unit to the hospice unit. All that can be done in the home, if that's possible, but there are facilities now. So they've got it into at least a three-stage care unit in
now,
Oregon.
Is this just in Oregon? It's just in Oregon, so in, that's nowhere else?
I don't know if it's anywhere else. I just know that it is in Oregon, and I know that it's not in most places. I originally trained with hospice in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is one of the biggest hospices around. That's where the Terry Schiavo case was.
Oh, gosh.
I wasn't
Don't
there
get me
at that
started
time.
On that one.
I know. I wasn't there at the time where it would have been. I would have been on TV. You know, it's like, oh, give me strength. But they didn't even have that. You know, they didn't even have palliative care. But that was back in the early 90s. So
yeah,
I think it's coming up. So it's another. The more I'm on the internet, you know, looking up things, I find that there's more and more people talking about this palliative care. There are thanatologists who study death who are now becoming sort of like midwives who start with somebody early on in their disease process and follow them through. There are music thanatologists who especially play harp music at the bedside.
And I want to mention one by name who's very dear to me, who's been on my radio show, a fellow near-death experiencer, brilliant, beautiful harpist, Christina Turin. She is absolutely wonderful. She performed at the 2004 IONS conference in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And her website is harprealm.com. But, her music is beautiful. I listen to it all the time on my iTunes. I've got this beautiful music streaming in. And I just constantly am telepathically thanking Christina as well as some of these others. But that also is a very important point. And being a musician myself and one who can't live without music, that's the drug of choice. I love to both play. play and sing, although sadly I'm too weak at this point to sing.
It's a shame to have to lose that.
I try a little bit, but to listen to and to play music, and it is amazingly healing.
It's amazingly healing. So my sister and her husband are into sound and music, and they work with DNA structure and trying to build a light body and things like that, and they use sound for it. And he has some amazing music, and they have a training program to teach people how to, you know, go within and to look at the light and to feel the vibrations. And we were talking before about the different dimensions. It's the frequency that you cross over at is where you will go. So the lighter you are, the more conscious you are of the spiritual dimension. If you have worked on this in your lifetime, you are prepared for this illumination that you will experience at death, and you take that lightness into a higher dimension. If you're bogged down and, you know, you're a thief and a liar and a rapist and a child molester and you tell lies and you hate people and you do harm wherever, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to reincarnate really quickly and come back and try to figure it out again.
Yes, good point.
So the lighter you are, the higher dimension, and that's the many dimensions, the many mansions of my father's house. Of the universe.
My mother's house, too.
Yes, my mother's house, too.
Let's not forget the feminine aspect.
Exactly.
that's so spot on, you know, according to my experience and research, too. And like you, I've been ravenous for knowledge, and I love studying, and that's why I've so enjoyed doing this radio show and studying the beautiful books and the wonderful people.
You get to meet such interesting people when you do that.
Oh, it's tremendous, and the wonderful messages and love and wisdom and information that's being shared is just priceless. And so I am very excited about this because, again, a number of us are really understanding and simultaneously sharing this with others that, again, depending on our frame of mind, our state of consciousness at the moment of transitioning, that's going to affect us not only during our near-death states, what happens during our near-death episodes, but also when we do the one-way ticket. No round trip this time. Thank you very much. You know.
Yeah.
So.
One of the first things that I realized in my experience when I was up there floating above the river, it occurred to me that I had done this before. And it was like, now I remember. This is what we do all the time. How could I have been so stupid to have forgotten this? You know, and then people email me and they say, well, why wouldn't we know all of this coming in? And it's like, well, because then you wouldn't learn anything if you knew everything.
That's exactly right.
So we gradually.
We've been infected with amnesia for that purpose. It's just because we have been inflicted with amnesia, it's temporary, not to worry.
Yeah, and we gradually remember things. It's like we have a deja vu, or we have a little, there's mom, you know, and it's like we start to question all this bad information that we've been given that has kept us down in this box, and we have all these secret societies that are trying to keep us from finding out the truth. That we are really spiritual beings, and we're not just human, and we got to let go of that and go beyond that, and that's the only way we're going to fix the world. The only way we're going to bring peace to the world is if we realize we're all one. And when we kill one person, we're killing ourselves. And it's, you know, it's like we got to. It's like when people believe the Earth was flat, and some Joe came along and said.
Thank you for saying that too.
Some Joe came along and said, no, it's round, and nobody believed him, you know, and it's like that saying you have on your website about when you first hear something, it's crazy, you know, and then by the time it gets down the road, it's everybody thinks that. Whoever thought the Earth was flat, how can anybody possibly think the planets revolved around the sun? That's insane. Of course they revolve around the Earth, and, you know, so now we're coming to an understanding that we are really spiritual beings having human being experiences over and over. Yeah. And it's just part of our spiritual development that goes on through this eternity that we're existing in, whatever amazing, you know, it's like I don't quite grasp all of that, but I read somewhere a long time ago that we can only understand the levels below us and one level above us. Any higher than that, it starts to get fuzzy. And that's what people say who are scientific, you know, they can't get past that level. They can get below. And do you know about the powers of 10?
Yes, I do.
Have you ever looked at those pictures, you know, where you can go down into your hand and all the way down, then you can go all the way out into the universe and the planets and the galaxies. And when you get to the farthest out and the farthest in, they look the same.
Yes, and actually I saw something recently that involved a bee on a flower and then looking into the bee's eye and then looking there and from there. Oh, yes.
That's amazing. But that's what opens the mind. And, you know, it's like people will go, oh, now I get it. But until they see something like that, they're stuck in this. You know, when we send our kids to school, we educate their left brain, but we don't educate their right brain. And we got to bring the brain together in order to see the whole picture.
Absolutely, we do. And there's such a, you know, it's interesting to think about kids being carted off to school, and I think, oh, they're being carted off to their daily prison and being duped and hoodwinked into lie after lie after lie. And I've
got
to
imprison that little mind before it gets too creative, and God knows what it'll do if it's left on its own.
And you know, sadly, Nadir, and this breaks me up because they're doing it back in the UK as well as I think in America as well now, is that they're sending little ones, even toddler age, to these institutions to be brainwashed. They're starting it earlier and earlier in a child's life to do just what you were saying.
Yeah, well, I feel bad for the children in, like, China and North Korea and even some of the Middle Eastern countries where they teach them religion from the age of, like, two. I don't know. They start them really early, and it's repetitive. It says, and you know, who knows what those people are saying. They learn to read it before they know what it means, and then they tell them what it means. And if they tell them it's a bad, you know, you got to kill everybody and you got to blow people up, it's like, well, then that's what they believe is true. Doesn't make it true, but it's that's what they believe. So
yes.
It's been a form of mind control that has been imposed on the human race since early on. I don't know who the first guy who sat down with a bunch of friends and said, hey, let's control the world, but we're not going to tell anybody who we are.
Yes.
You know, it's insane.
It really is. Well, my friend David Icke has done a lovely job exposing a lot of this kind of thing going on, and I really, really love his book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an experienced in the ear and all of that, and reading that, I just said, this is spot on according to my experience, and it totally, totally resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are, we do constitute infinite consciousness and infinite possibility, and we are all one, and I don't want to sound trite or cliche-ish here because it really is true, and we know this when we're going through these episodes, and even now when I'm, you know, I'll pop out a little bit now and again, and I feel that connection all over again because the mortal mind is completely out of the way, and I'm just more in my true essence.
You're going to have to tell us about your adventures on the other side.
Oh, and
you pop back and forth.
Yes, it's interesting, and that's why I thought, you know, no problem here. I'm going to be very open. My sojourn on this plane is coming to a close, and I want to, you know, to help remove the spookiness, because it isn't spooky.
Right.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and I want people to party and celebrate and dance and sing. Because
exactly.
We're looking at a celebration, and sure, it's always hard to see somebody off at the airport.
Sure.
So it's all right if people need to grieve or go through that and love themselves through that, but also celebrate simultaneously the graduation.
Right, and that's what I'm hoping to do with this transition guide training, is to teach people how to teach people to do that, so that they have a joyous send-off. The family is all there, and everybody's getting along, and all the problems have been resolved or put on the shelf, and everybody's happy because they know that even though they're not going to see them, they're going to have their life on the other side, and they're people who have died before, and, you know, we've got as many on the other side as we do on this side, and so it's like, and we'll see you again. And on the other side, there's no time. So a minute later, you know, the rest of the family has crossed over.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like you went away to college. Maybe you lived for 100 years, or maybe you lived for 10 years, or maybe you only lived for an hour, and then you're back.
That's it.
And what we see in this world is an illusion, but we have this life to live. I know it's very confusing. I mean, I feel sorry for people struggling to understand this, because I know it's, you know, because we've been there, it's like, oh, yeah, obvious.
Yes.
But, what's wrong with you that you don't get this? This is just a coat that I'm wearing, and I pop out. And, you know, I understand that it's difficult because we have these weird lives that we live on this planet. I'm standing here right now, and the snow is coming down, and it's so beautiful. We're in for another 4 or 5 days of snow, but it's just starting. The trees are just starting to get white. And it's beautiful.
That's beautiful. Oh,
yeah.
That is really stunning, too.
I know, you know, how hard it is, and I know how hard it is to try to explain it to people. I try, and, you know, most people just go, yeah, okay. And until something actually happens that turns on the light, they're like, oh, that's what she was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like until they get it, they don't get it. And
yeah,
that
is my favorite word, until they grok.
Until they what? Until they
rock
it.
Word grok it.
Grok it.
The word grok comes from the beautiful book Stranger and a Strange Man, and to grok something is to wholly get it with your entire being.
Exactly.
It's beyond just getting it intellectually or what have you. Your whole being gets it and knows it. So that's one of my favorite words that I've enjoyed using.
Interesting. I'll have to remember that one. But, you know, it's like something happens when shortly after we're born that kind of turns off that knowing. They say that children up to 7 can, you know, will have imaginary friends, and it's nothing to them to see Grandpa playing with his train set with him, and Mom doesn't see him, but the kid sees him. But then something happens. I don't know whether as parents we say the wrong thing to them and that turns them off, or whether they make some connection and they think, well, if I talk about that, people will get upset. But, you know, so many kids have this, and today with these indigo kids, and I don't know, they have rainbow kids and all kinds of amazing children these days that seem to come into this life knowing that they came from somewhere else. And they're awakening their parents, because the parents, they won't shut up, and and the parents have to deal with it in some way. So it's like these new children, and maybe because, see, I think that part of the problem, reason the world is such a mess, is that when we die, we don't know what happens, so we go through a period of confusion. It kind of messes up the whole system. If we die consciously and aware, and each time we die, we reach a higher dimension, until we reach a dimension where we don't have to come back anymore, you know, I lost my thought. I went off into outer space and forgot where I took off.
Well, it just feels like, you know, that we can be more... you were talking about this world being such a mess.
Oh, right. So if we would learn to die in this peaceful way, and we wouldn't have to come back and lead these... See, if you don't get it... Oh, well, we didn't talk about this. If you don't get it the next time, the lesson is harder. And then if you don't get it then the lesson is harder. It's like first you might get sick, and then somebody might die. It's like each lesson you have to learn gets harder and harder until we get it. So something has to shock us into remembering what it was we forgot when we were 7 years old, or however that happened. and we could make the world better, because when we come back in, when we do reincarnate, we don't have the, you know, when I think about Darfur and the starvation, these poor people living in these camps in the middle of nowhere with nothing to eat, and why do people have to come back and go through that? You know, it's like, I think we need to raise the consciousness of humanity. It's got to do with the evolution of consciousness, so that as people remember, instead of forgetting at 7 years old, they remember that they're connected to the spiritual dimension, so they live their lives differently. Because when you're open to that, you don't steal from other people, you don't murder other people, you don't trample other people. You are kind and loving and compassionate. And in that kind of a world, there should be no wars. We'll figure it out. We won't have to go to war over it. We'll figure it out among ourselves, because we are one, and what affects you affects me. And so we've got to all be in this together. And when we have problems like global warming, you know, how real it is or whatever, if the whole world is working on it, we're going to solve it. If one country or nation is working on it, it's too big. You know, we need the whole world.
Actually, being caused by the sun, because the sun is cyclic too, about how much heat it puts out, how much radiation it puts out, and so the sun right now is peaking too, and that's what's actually causing the global warming.
Right, there's the two things coming together, and it's like, if we start doing things that will help the planet on a global scale, we can maybe keep us from going into another ice age, or keep us from going into a melt off, or, you know, what can we do? And we have to do it as all of us. It can't be just a few people. It's not enough. So we need people of higher consciousness to exist at a time in the world where we really need them. You know, it's like coming together. What we need is happening at the right time. And I know a lot of people are pessimistic about the future and the end of the world and all this stuff. And to me, other than an asteroid crashing into the planet and wiping us all out in an instant, I don't see that the world is going to end and all this biblical stuff. And,
no.
You know, the Earth is going to go on until something cataclysmic happens. And, you know, but I believe that we incarnate on other planets. I think there's no reason why this one planet in all this vast universe should be the only one that has beings on it, you know?
Yes, thank you.
So it's in the numbers.
It's very daft of us. It's so arrogant of us to think that we're the only life form or planet with intelligent life on it in all of existence. Give me a break, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's utterly daft. And, you know, this myopia that people have been inflicted with, and again, this gets back to the kids, and I think the real issue has been that at an early age, they're already starting to be brainwashed. The society, the teachers, the schools, the parents, just the whole way that society has been set up is erroneous. It doesn't work. And thank goodness these very aware children, and PMH has written a lovely, lovely book called Beyond the Indigo Children, The New Children and the Coming of the Fifth World. She shares a lot about these new kids, because they're so much like us, a child in the ears.
Mm-hmm.
The way they think, the way they behave, they need everyone and everything to be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't tolerate phoniness or pretentiousness or anything like that. They're ravenous for knowledge and the ability to be creative, and not being controlled. I think a lot of kids are going to resist it. So hopefully there will be enough of these kids to break that spell, because and talk about the end of the world, it's the end of a paradigm, thank goodness.
Yeah.
It's a paradigm that doesn't work. Pluto has just entered Capricorn. So we're going to see the downfall of all of this money nonsense.
This is really an interesting shift that's happening. It's going to change the whole world economy and the way we do business and the way we look at money and things like that. But, you know, it's kind of like we do what we know at the time, and we do the best we can
yes.
with what we know, but we've stayed stuck in what we knew instead of there's got to be new ways to look at this. I mean, with the computer and knowledge expanding exponentially, people have got to be able to figure this out according to what's happening and not stay stuck. Well, what did Franklin Delano Roosevelt do? Well, who cares? You know, that was too long ago and too much has changed and we've got to know what to do. So we do the best we can with what we know, and hopefully, you know, we're getting knowledge is just going crazy, and, you know, hopefully as we become one planet, we'll all work together and make it happen for the best, because we can't keep treating people like we've been doing and expect the world to be any different. It has to start with the way we treat each other, treat ourselves
yeah.
even, you know, learn to love ourselves and know who we are and know that we're great and powerful spiritual beings and not these puny little humans that we think we are. And
well,
we have
point.
We have more potential than we think we do.
Yes, and
you know, we don't need
Diane,
to be controlled.
Spot on there. You're absolutely, you know, you're making a really, really paramount point here, because as we do come to really know our divine heritage and being, and that we are indeed all one, and just the truth about the fact that life is indeed eternal, we cannot lose consciousness, we cannot die. I mean, my body's fading on me, it's breaking down day by day. I'm not the least bit afraid. I'm laughing my head off in here and having fun, and, you know, other than dealing with the pain and the weakness, which is inconvenient for a hummingbird Aquarius who just wants to fly all over the place, but never
Absolutely.
Mind.
Absolutely.
The fact is that as we can share the love and remind people of our, you know, that we are all divine, that as this will help to dissipate the fear
mm-hmm.
that keeps us locked in ignorance.
Right.
That's the key right there.
And I think that fear, overcoming fear of death, is the root of that. When we get people to not be afraid to die, not be afraid that it's the end of their lives, that they do go on, that then they will realize that they've been afraid of
something that doesn't
exist, right?
Hello!
Exactly! Wake up!
And that's why I, you know, I just thought, yes, I'm going to keep doing this work and share this with people.
Yeah.
There's nothing
absolutely.
Freaky about it, you know?
No, there isn't. Yeah.
This body suit's a mess, but I never liked it anyway. I've tried to take care of it, mind you, but I'm happy to get rid of it. I really, really am. And yet, I have really been committed to being a good sport every time I've been sent back to, because I really, like yourself, Diane, I feel so passionate about this work and sharing the love and the wisdom gleaned from our experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not something to be kept inside and not tell anybody about anymore. It's something we need to be shouting from the rooftops and say, look, this is what happens.
And here I am at 66, and I used to be such a timid lass and young lady. And you know, oh, somebody's agreeing here.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, we've got some agreement going on.
Yes, she got excited about it, too.
It's time to just, you know, oh, the horn. And share the love and the truth, and that's, you know, that's really, really wonderful and paramount. Now, I wanted to ask you, is your work centered on helping someone, educating someone, the one who is dying, or people surrounding the dying individual, or the one who's, I don't like to use the word dying, because we're not dying, we're just,
you know,
body fading out here.
Yeah.
Sort of like the light bulb, you know, just it gets really bright and then it's gone.
Yeah, dims and, yeah. Actually, no, I'm not training people how to do the method. I've developed the method, and I want to teach others. Actually, I want to teach the trainers who will then teach others. So the people I'm working with right now are either yoga instructors, they do Reiki, they do energy or light healing, they're spiritual ministers, counselors, They may be involved in a church. They may have their own schedule of classes where they're already interacting with people on a deep level. And I can train them as teachers, and then they can train their students to either be transition guides or to teach a family how to do this work. So the course that I'm offering, it has a 6-week self-study course, which has a manual and a CD, and they can study at their own pace, but it's basically a 6-week course. And then I have a weekend certification training that allows them to teach the method that I've laid out in the training program. And it's not like it's something that they've never done before, because these kinds of people meditate, and a lot of them will do yoga, and hypnotherapy is another one, because there's guided imageries. So these are people who are kind of already doing similar work, and this is a service they can add onto their list of services. Like if, say, a client says, oh, I just found out I have breast cancer and I'm going to go through all these treatments, the trainer can then start working with them to teach them meditation and relaxation to help them deal with their treatments and, you know, whatever's going to go on. If they have to have surgery, they teach them a breathing technique, which is familiar to them. And, you know, then depending on how the person does, a lot of times they'll go into remission for a while. So you can then maybe work with somebody and teach them how to write their own guidebook, so that, because eventually they're going to die. You know, even if they go into remission or the disease is cured, they still could walk out the door and get hit by a bus.
That's true.
You know, so you got to be. I think actually they should start teaching children before they get the driver's license, because the next 10 years are the most likely for them to have a sudden death. You know, in an auto accident. So we should teach it to kids in high school. So I will teach anybody. They could teach it as a community college course. They could teach it as a community education course. I think the Red Cross should know this. I want to train hospice. So that's why I'm starting with the trainers, because when people hear about this and they're thinking, oh, yeah, I think I'd like to do that, who's going to teach me? Then I've got teachers out there that I can send them to. So, you know, I'll have a directory of people who have been certified, and people can find out more about it on the website. And
let's give out your websites, Lovey. That's it, because this is really, really very wonderful and important work that you're doing. So why don't you share with our listeners what your websites are? And, of course, there are links to your website from your page on my website.
Right, from that profile.
Toldthelight.org.
Right. The one where I have the training is called transitionguidetraining.org. And that has all the information about the courses and what it's about. And I have another website called BeyondTheVeil, VEIL.net. And that has my near-death experience and a lot of my writings that I've done over the years. I've had that site since 1996, I think. So I used to write emails back and forth to people about their questions about death and dying for so many years. So there's a lot of information and resources, as books and links to, you could spend your life on that website just reading all the information.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, you know, if you really want to study, if you want to know how I came to where I am now, I read all that stuff. So if you read all that stuff, you'll know where I am. But, you know, anybody who has questions about the meaning of life, and, you know, people go through this existential angst where they get into the nihilism and they think, oh, the end is just blackness and darkness and hell and death, and oh, you know, they come up with all these, and they question whether there is a God, and, you know, they have all these questions and they don't know where to go for answers. So that's the reason for that site. But this new one, transitionguidetraining.org, talks about conscious dying, and I'm going to be launching the final, I've been working on this for several years, and now I'm coming out with the final, I hope the final course and materials that go with it, and you know, a recommended reading list and how people can prepare themselves for this work if they want to. People who want to be transition guides, it's not where there's going to be a job out there waiting for you, because there are none at this point. And that's why I'm trying to teach trainers who are already doing something similar, and they can just integrate this into their work. But all the information you'll need. And I keep up with CompassionandChoices.org, deals with the legislative action, the laws. Washington State just passed, this November, passed a law, a Death with Dignity law, and it tells what they're doing legislatively in other states like Montana and Nebraska and Connecticut, and several states are gearing up to get this on the ballot for physician-assisted suicide. And I don't like to use the word suicide.
I don't either. How about physician-assisted transition?
Yeah. Well, I've been calling it aid in dying, and then that's what Compassion and Choices has switched to. In fact, that was part of the fight in Washington where they insisted that the word suicide be written into the law. And other side felt that, Compassion and Choices people felt that that turned people off right away because they go to suicide and it's not.
And it's taken
suicide.
Out of context. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not suicide. Not in the least.
Right.
And see, I also like to avoid using the word dying or death because...
I know. We need to come up with new words.
Yes, and boy, our
graduation, to me, it's graduation.
Well, that's how I regard it because I thought, oh, blimey, I'm getting ready to graduate out of this tough university I've been through, you know? And it's been a crash course, but
yes.
You know, it's interesting, too, because when I was sitting at the table with the hospice physician, Dr. Kimberly, what a beautiful spirit, and I was also saying to Martha, interesting, she had a social worker working with her, whose name was Martha, and my hospice social worker is also named Martha. Lovely, lovely ladies. But anyway, I was telling them, I said, well... you know, this is something that is already completely familiar to me, and it's something that I'm, you know, totally at ease with and comfortable with, and it doesn't bother me in the least. And so then, you know, when we can kind of keep things light about it, I think that really helps too, because I was explaining how you know, the body is changing, but yet I feel very much intact. My consciousness is and very clear, and you know, and just to help remove this this funny feeling about the, oh my God, what's going to happen? Well, you know. It's going to be a natural flow. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and this has really bothered me, is I've had it happen where I'd be talking to someone, and you know, this has been some of these fundamentalist sorts, and you know, here they've been talking to and hearing from somebody who's been to the other side a number of times, and then that individual turns around and says, well, after you die, that's the end of the story. You're dead and nothing else happens. And I thought, how can you say that when you've just heard all of this testimony from an experiencer? And I wonder if that's happened to you, where people would just turn to you point blank and make these claims after you've already shared with them this profound and accurate information.
Well, believe me, I got plenty of email from the Christians.
Yeah.
You know, they gave me their spiel, and I would just write back and say, well, you know, you believe what you believe. And one line I used to use was, well, I've been there and you just read the book.
I've said exactly the same thing. Verbatim, my dear.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I think Jesus had a near-death experience, and, you know, know, that, that they made up this other story because, you know, that fit better than a near-death experience for some reason.
And in my way of thinking, or according to what I've come to understand, is that Jesus is just a myth of the Son. And I don't believe that Jesus, quote-unquote, ever actually existed, that's just a metaphor, beautiful myth, like all the other myths that correspond with the...
And that's the thing, it matches so many other myths, you know, it's like Osiris, you know, and the Romans, and it's like if you follow the string about these different thought patterns that developed over the ages, one follows the other, and elements of the whole story of Jesus and the crucifixion is in other myths. So, you know, it's like either you stay stuck in that belief or you move on. And so many people are, I guess, find security in having a rigid, you know, a box that they can fit everything in, and that works for them. But I've always been more of a free thinker and just have never believed, you know, what people told me that didn't make sense. If it didn't make sense to me, why would I believe it? And I don't know. It's just, you know, a lot of people think I'm nuts, but, you know, you believe what you believe. And some people, you just can't change their mind because that gives them security. And it's like pulling the rug out from under them. They wouldn't know what to do if they didn't have that security blanket.
Well, that is a good point, because they need their sense of security in their in what is familiar to them, and then they're always trying to get other people to join their club, as I call it, and regardless of the fact that I'm a minister and a counselor, I've had some people trying to convert me, and there was one person who sent me an email. Oh, he was nasty as could be, and I thought, well, just by your sheer nastiness, you're not giving me an example I want to follow, lad.
I know, yeah. They get angry and belligerent, and it's like, well, what kind of religion is that?
Yes, and I'm not going to become angry and belligerent. My feeling is, if someone doesn't resonate with something I've got to say, that's fine. Maybe down the pipe they'll discover there's something meaningful about what I shared.
Well, that's another thing that's happened to me quite often, is that, like, a couple of years later, somebody will come back to me and go, you know, I didn't believe you then, but I believe you now. Something else happened that made them go, oh, that's what she was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I used to trip out the Latter-day Saints. They'd come to my door, and I'd invite them in, and I'd start talking to them, and they would, like, run out of here screaming. Well, you really don't have to invite us in. I said, oh, but I wanted to talk to you and exchange ideas. Oh, no, no, the end of the world is coming.
Oh, you're wonderful.
I'm sorry, but you people just have to wake up.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I've sort of done that in my subtle way, too. Well, something slightly different happened several weeks ago when a Jehovah Witness person came. She just popped by and dropped off a piece of literature. She didn't even try to preach to me. She was an unassuming, sweet little old lady who just carried on. And I knew what it was, and straight away I was going to toss it into the rubbish, and then something said, no, have a look at that.
I usually read them.
Well, I did this one, and I tell you, it was a good thing I did, because it had one paragraph, what happens when we die? And I thought, ooh. And then I read the second paragraph, is there any hope for the dead? And I was blown away at what I read, and I ended up writing an article about it on my blog Into Light, entitled Religion, the Ultimate Fear Propaganda.
Yeah, exactly.
Because in this article, they were claiming, oh, at death, that's the end of the story. You're dead. The dead cannot think. They cannot do anything. They cannot see. They cannot feel. They know nothing. I thought, what are you on? Hello? And I was so surprised to realize that this kind of ignorance is still circulating in light of the fact that there have been literally millions of those near-death experiences from all over the world who have come back and said, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
You do not cease to be when you leave your body behind. The only thing you leave behind is your body.
Right. You'd think after like 13 million people have said that, that somebody would say, oh, you think they're right?
Exactly.
That's not a small portion of people.
No. No, it isn't. And there's more and more all the time, especially with the, the technology in, you know, in resuscitation, but also in communications, mm-hmm. you know, and this precious radio show, we can share this message all over the world.
So I know, the Internet has been amazing for that, because other than that, I don't know how it would have gotten out as much as it has.
And I encourage people, and in fact, even when somebody comes at me with a contrary remark, all I'll say is, dear soul, please do your research and mm-hmm. then make a comment. Do
yeah.
your research.
Right.
If it's uncomfortable with what your mindset is right now, well, do your research, because let me say this. We all had broken hearts as children when we learned that Father Christmas, Santa Claus, is a myth. You know?
Exactly.
So it's going to be unsettling to have our belief systems shaken up a bit.
Well, anytime there's a paradigm shift like this, there's got to be a period where everything is like in flux and disarray until it can settle out again and a new idea, a new paradigm comes into view and people start recognizing it and realizing that it is something that they need to look at.
Absolutely.
And that's where I think everything that's, I think even think Obama becoming elected president and the economic collapse and all that's going on, I think all of this is part of this shift, and you need to completely tear down a system before you can change it. You just can't keep patching it.
Yes,
so
indeed.
Maybe we all have to fall apart before we can get, you know, like somebody has to hit bottom before they recognize that they're an alcoholic. Well, we need to realize that we've been an alcoholic with greed and power
you.
And, you know, trying to, these secret societies and running the world and, you know, it's for the people.
Yes, and I've, you know, what I've been doing too is using the analogy of the planet and all life going into labor, getting ready for rebirth. For Earth, because, you know, and even in the book Women Who Run with the Wolves, there's always
mm-hmm.
the reminder, life, death, life.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stop at death. Death is just a shift.
Right.
You know? And in fact, the other day I was thinking of myself like a little girl. I thought, blimey, I'm outgrowing this outfit that's just way too bloody small for me. And it's very uncomfortable for me now. But we get attached to our little outfits, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Oh, dear, I don't want to let go of this outfit. Well, me, to be honest, I'm happy to let go of this one. I'm not quite keen on it. But, you know, it's just I'm growing out of it, and it's no big deal. And I know full well that my consciousness and my selfhood are going to continue because I've had enough experience behind me to really drive it home that I'm not going to cease to be. And and another thing that I wanted to share, a little bit of encouragement for you and for everybody else, really, and I'm inspired by my friend David Icke, because we've all been subject to people saying, oh, you're crazy, or you're out of your mind, or this is of the devil, which doesn't exist, and this and that and so on. And, you know, the thing is that when you know your truth, it's important to not be daunted by the naysayers or those who are ridiculing you or poking at you. And that's why I've got the quote on my emails, too. At first, the truth is denied, then it's fully ridiculed, and then it becomes self-apparent.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we're still living too much in a flat-world mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But every day, somebody else is waking up.
Yeah.
Every day, this is shifting more and more.
Mm-hmm. And it's accelerating. Coming
very
faster.
Much so.
More and
yeah.
more people. Yeah.
So I see what's going on with our world right now as something really auspicious, as part of the divine plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's going to be messy. That's true. But again, when we can keep remembering we are infinite beings, we cannot be destroyed. The form can be destroyed, but we cannot be.
Exactly.
And if everyone can get that into one's heart and mind and just really know that, you know, we're here to reassure, again, as a result of our experiences, we're here to reassure that that is indeed the case. And even physics is understanding this now.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
So we've just got to be, you know, to continue to spread this love and this truth and to let people know that life is indeed forever, and that's been my assignment. That's why I was sent back here from my big NDE from colon cancer in the mid-70s. And then I had another one in 89, which was very, very brief, but the one in the 70s was a very transcendent experience. Huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The one in 89 was too, but just it was different as well. So, you know, I really feel excited about the opportunity to share this and to encourage people. And for however long I can, I'm certainly happy to respond to people's questions. And I, like you, Diane, people would send questions in an email and then I would turn it into a question and answer, a Q&A, and put it on my blog. Wonderful questions that people are asking.
Yeah, in fact, I wrote a book, or I put together a book of some of my better female, or I guess the emails that I thought would be most helpful to other people into a book, an e-book, and I have that available on my transitionguidetraining.org website. And it's questions that people ask and dialogues that we had and, you know, responses from me. And so, yeah, and it's just amazing, the questions. I was able to put them in categories. You know, fear of death was, I think, the biggest category.
Yes.
Grief was a big category, and reincarnation was another category, and near-death experiences and spiritual experiences, obviously. And, yeah, so it's broken down into categories. And it's just amazing how many questions that people have and similar questions, you know, like some questions over and over I would get the same questions. And, yeah. So people want to know, and they don't know where to go for answers. So thank God for the Internet. It's been a big help to get the information out there.
And speaking of, I would like to share with our listeners the group that you are also a member of that is online. It's Light on the Water, which is a near-death support and interest group online for experiencers, researchers, caregivers, loved ones, seekers, anyone is more than welcome to join this. If there's no fee or anything involved. And it's lightonthewater.ning, N as in nighttime, ing.com. So lightonthewater.ning.com. And Diana, I want to encourage you to feel free to put your course or any materials on here you'd like to that you haven't done so already, and don't forget to include your websites on your profile page so that people can access them, because this is a wonderful community, and I think we're upwards of over 60 members now and growing.
Wow. So. That's great, because I get a lot of email from people wanting to know where they might find a Friends of Ions group, and every city doesn't have them, so having support on the web is, you know, where people can ask questions and talk about their experiences. That's great.
Well, that is exactly the reason why I built this community, and Light on the Water is named after my you know, near death support and interest group. But it's not about just, you know, my group at all. It's about all of us doing this very thing. In fact, next Saturday, the 27th December, from 9 to 11 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time, is our virtual Light on the Water near-death support and interest group meeting that anyone who can ring a U.S. telephone number can participate in and have wonderful, meaningful dialogues. And so that's coming up a week from yesterday, actually, the Light on the Water meeting. But indeed, I'd like to encourage anyone who's interested in this kind of thing to join Light on the Water. If you've got your own events, meetings, whatever that's coming up, you can put them on the site. You can add videos, photos, music. I just encourage keeping it to theme, not having people trying to sell religion and all of that. Yeah. But this, you know,
oh, you will get those. They
yeah,
will come
already
on.
Have done, but I just pointed out that it's just not in keeping with the theme, and it's not appropriate content, and so we need to refrain from that. But it's a lovely group, and I certainly encourage people to join, because they can have dialogues, they can put blogs, they can put articles, of course, links back to their website. Oh, by all means, come and join us and be as active or inactive as you want. It's really, really wonderful. Well, I'm starting to get a little bit weary that I am...
Okay, we have been talking a while, haven't we?
Yes, it's wonderful. And I'd like to ask you, Diana, is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners that you're doing or any engagements coming up, anything special that you would like to share before we close this transmission of Tool to Light?
The only thing would be if anybody is interested in training to go to the website and you can get all the information there. You can download an application for the certification training. You can order the manual for the self-study course. And if you have any questions, my email address is on there, transitionguide@mac.com.
Hello, Mac user.
yeah, I'm a Mac user. And, yeah, well, obviously we would be Mac users, right? We couldn't be contained
yeah.
into a PC.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, if you do go over to the other side, be sure to pop in and give me a hug before you go to the light.
Oh, I'll do that. I'm going to
okay.
be a loving little terror, I promise you.
And do come and share your wisdom with me whenever you like.
Oh, I will. And this is so wonderful. And I'm pleased to share this process as much as I'm able to for however long I've got the strength and the ability to do it right now. I just feel like there's a miracle going on. I did get a healing treatment yesterday before a light on the water meeting. And so I'm feeling blessed with some wonderful strength, but then I also crash again and down I go, and so it is really for everybody that I happen to have this strength at the moment, for which I'm so deeply, deeply grateful. But I do want to be available to answer people's questions, and I know there's all kinds of thoughts and emotions and questions and feelings and everything just going all over the place right now. But I'm here to help. I'm here to continue doing the work until I pop me clogs.
Well, good. And I hope you're going to be around for quite a while to share that with us. But we're all going to go soon, one of these days, and we'll all meet again on the other side.
Absolutely. And indeed, fully conscious and
fully conscious.
Creative and raring to go.
Dancing and singing and, yeah, carrying
yes.
on. And
absolutely. Without question, without question. Well, my dear, you've been absolutely wonderful. It's been a joy having you. I've been so looking forward to this. I want to thank you, Diane. We've been speaking with Diane Goebel, talking about the work of conscious dying and her work with transition guides. So please look up her websites, which are, again, is beyondtheveil.net and transition, let me see if I've got this right, transition guide,
training.
What was the last part?
Training.org. Right.
Transitionguidetraining.org. Okay. And, of course, your page is on my website, too, towardthelight.org/Diane Goebel, G-O-B as in brother, L-E. .html. So be sure and visit her page on towardthelight.org. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails, and we will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Love and blessings to all of you. We'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.